Today is Wednesday, July 23rd, 2025, and you're listening to the World Socialist website. Mobilize the working class against Trump's fascistic attack on immigrants. By Jacob Cross. As part of the Trump administration's attempt to establish a presidential dictatorship and overturn what remains of the U.S. Constitution, the government is rapidly expanding its war on immigrants. Recent developments underscore the advanced state of the crisis and the need for the working class to intervene independently against both parties and their shared anti-immigrant agenda. What is being done to immigrants will soon be used against all opponents of the financial oligarchy. In response to the shooting of an off-duty Customs and Border Protection agent, a CBP agent, Saturday, in New York City, Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, and Department of Homeland Security, DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, threatened to flood major cities with ICE agents at a Monday press conference. Homan declared, "Sanctuary cities are now our priority. We are going to flood the zone. Sanctuary cities get exactly what they don't want. More agents in the community and more agents in the worksite." End quote. For the past 6 months, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, often masked and backed by police or militarized units, have violently disappeared workers, students, and longtime residents as part of Trump and his fascistic advisor Stephen Miller's goal of deporting 3,000 people a day, or 1 million a year. Bloomberg reported Tuesday that the federal government granted a $1.26 billion contract to Virginia-based Acquisition Logistics Company to build a sprawling tent camp at Fort Bliss, Texas. The camp will hold 5,000 beds, making it the largest immigration detention site in the country. Fort Bliss, located in the Chihuahuan Desert near El Paso, regularly sees temperatures above 95 degrees Fahrenheit, or 35 degrees Celsius. Forcing people to live in tents there will lead to immense suffering and death. Other military bases are also being utilized for domestic repression. A July 15th letter signed by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth approved DHS request to detain 1,000 immigrants each at Joint Base McGuire-Dix Lakehurst in New Jersey and Camp Atterbury in Indiana, and to double the capacity of the Guantanamo Bay prison camp to 400 detainees. Conditions inside the sprawling for-profit immigration detention network are degrading and deadly. A recently released Human Rights Watch report, "You Feel Like Your Life Is Over," based on interviews with detainees and families, exposes horrific conditions in three overcrowded Florida centers. At least 11 people have died in ICE custody this year, including five in Florida. Nearly 57,000 are detained nationwide, despite ICE's official capacity of 41,000. Florida's Chrome North Service Processing Center, the Broward Transitional Center, run by GEO Group, and the Miami Federal Detention Center, BOP run, are all implicated in abuse. Individuals interviewed by Human Rights Watch described freezing, overcrowded cells, broken toilets, and denial of medical care or hygiene. Brian and Jose asserted guards violently attacked protesting detainees on April 15th, using stun grenades and restraints after disabling a camera. Pedro said that guards retaliated against detainees who had visitors. "The guards made me get completely naked, turn around, bend down, and get on all fours and cough." Harpinder Chauhan said inmates were forced to eat like dogs while shackled. Andrea and Rosa recalled women being denied medication, leading to one diabetic detainee being hospitalized. The wife of a detainee has not heard from her husband, Jesus, in over a month. I don't know if he's alive. My husband has no record here. He's being held incommunicado. Rosa, on solitary confinement. If you ask for help, they isolate you. So people stay silent. The recently opened Everglades concentration camp, which was not featured in the report, already faces reports of overcrowded steaming tents and maggot-infested food. Importantly, the report notes that one of the factors leading to overcrowding at ICE detention facilities was the passage of the adoption of the Lake and Riley Act. The Lake and Riley Act rushed through Congress with Democratic votes prior to the inauguration of Trump, mandates detention without bail for immigrants accused of petty crimes. There is mass opposition to the fascistic attack on immigrants, expressed in many protests throughout the country, including the mobilization of communities against the deportation of workers. Last month, polling by Gallup found that 78% of respondents favor allowing undocumented immigrants to live in the U.S. on their way to becoming citizens. The same poll found that 85% said undocumented children brought to the U.S. by their parents should also be allowed to become U.S. citizens, and 79% of respondents think immigration is a good thing. Only 30% said they think immigration to the U.S. should be reduced, down from 55% last year. Opposition to the war on immigrants, however, cannot be waged through the Democratic Party or any of the institutions of the state. The Biden administration and the Obama administration before it carried out mass deportations and laid the foundations for Trump's immigration Gestapo. Biden also oversaw the brutal crackdown on college campuses against students protesting the genocide in Gaza, which has continued under Trump with the full support of the Democratic Party. Democrats are not opposing Trump, but are active partners in the war on immigrants. When Trump nationalized California's National Guard to aid ICE raids, Governor Gavin Newsom sent 800 state police against protesters. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass imposed a curfew and unleashed Los Angeles police on protesters. Under conditions in which U.S. citizens and legal immigrants are being detained and deported without due process last week, in an interview with CNN's Anderson Cooper, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders endorsed deportations while criticizing some of Trump's specific actions. If you're a drug dealer, you are somebody in this country undocumented or has committed a crime. I think most people think, hey, have a nice day. You're out of here. And I support that. End quote. This followed earlier statements by Sanders that Trump had done right in attacking immigrants and making sure our border is strong. The statements and actions of the Democrats over the last 6 months underscores that the same party that is responsible for Trump's return to the White House is incapable of defending democratic rights. This is because the Democrats, no less than the Republicans, are a party of Wall Street and war. Trump's fascistic assault on immigrants is aimed at scapegoating the most vulnerable in society to shield the real source of poverty, war, and repression, the capitalist ruling class. The capitalist oligarchy is waging war on immigrants even as it is slashing social programs, public education, workplace regulations, and every social and democratic right of the entire working class. The working class must reject all efforts to divide it along national, racial, or ethnic lines. The fight to defend immigrant workers can succeed only through the unified mobilization of the working class as a whole, black, white, native-born, immigrant, documented, and undocumented alike. This means organizing independently of the capitalist parties and building rank-and-file committees in every workplace, school, and neighborhood to oppose deportation operations and prepare collective action using the immense social power of the working class. The defense of immigrants is inseparable from the defense of all democratic rights. To defeat fascism and stop the drive to war and dictatorship. Workers must take up the fight for socialism. As Karl Marx wrote in 1848, the working men have no country. The solution to national fascism is international socialism. Workers of the world, unite. Israel massacres more than 300 Palestinians in 3 days as hunger knocks on every door in Gaza. By Oscar Grenfell. The Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, killed at least 81 Palestinians in Gaza in the 24 hours beginning dawn Tuesday as part of the Zionist regime's stepped-up offensive this week, targeting all areas of the Strip, including the city of El Dair al-Balah, which had previously been spared heavy bombardment. According to Gaza health authorities, 31 of the dead were aid seekers. The total number of starving Palestinians shot dead by Israel while seeking food now exceeds 1,000 since the establishment in May of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, the GHF. On Tuesday, United Nations or UN Human Rights Office spokesperson Thamin Al-Kitan told the Associated Free Press, quote, "As of July 21st, we've recorded 1,054 people killed in Gaza while trying to get food. 766 of them were killed in the vicinity of GHF sites, and 288 near UN and other humanitarian organizations' aid convoys." End quote. The U.S. and Israeli-controlled foundation is a mechanism for corralling Palestinians into the southernmost part of the Strip, where they're routinely gunned down by Israeli forces. The aim is to prepare the expulsion of the Palestinians from Gaza entirely, while legitimizing Israel's ban on all genuine aid organizations transporting desperately needed supplies into the Strip. On Sunday, the IDF massacred 92 aid seekers. On Monday, it responded to global shock and horror by murdering some 130 Palestinians. Together with the killings on Tuesday, that takes the three-day toll to at least 303. The direct killings are being accompanied by a rapid rise in the number of Palestinians dying of starvation as a direct consequence of the Israeli blockade. On Tuesday, 15 Palestinians succumbed to starvation. Among them were 4 children, including 13-year-old Abdul Hamid Al-Galban, who died at a hospital in the southern city of Khan Yunis, and 6-week-old baby Yusuf Al-Safadi. The baby's uncle, Adam Al-Safadi, told Reuters that the family had been desperately trying to find baby formula for days. Quote, "You can't get milk anywhere, and if you do find any, it's $100 for a tub," he said. At least 21 children have starved to death in the past 3 days. Of the 101 Palestinians confirmed to have died from hunger, 80 were children, almost all perishing over recent weeks. On Tuesday, Professor Nick Maynard, a British surgeon volunteering in the last functioning hospital in the south of the Strip, detailed the horrific conditions on the ground. In a report published in The Guardian, Maynard stated, "I'm writing this from Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza, where I've just finished operating on another severely malnourished young teenager. A 7-month-old baby lies in our pediatric intensive care unit, so tiny and malnourished that I initially mistook her for a newborn." The phrase "skin and bones" doesn't do justice to the way her body has been ravaged. Maynard wrote, "We are witnessing deliberate starvation in Gaza right now." End quote. The hospital has run out of baby formula, so if forced to use 10% dextrose sugar water, which has no nutritional value. Mothers are frequently too malnourished to breastfeed. When an international doctor sought to bring formula into Gaza for use at Nasser Hospital, it was confiscated by the Israeli authorities. Growing numbers of patients, Maynard reported, are dying after surgeries because they're too weak to fight off infections. He warned that the enforced malnutrition would imminently claim thousands of lives. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres made a similar warning to a meeting at the Security Council in New York this week, describing the situation in Gaza as a horror show in the level of death and destruction without parallel in recent times. Malnourishment is soaring. Starvation is knocking on every door. And now we're seeing the last gasp of a humanitarian system built on humanitarian principles. This system is being denied the conditions to function, denied the space to deliver, denied the safety to save lives. End quote. Guterres denounced Israel's deliberate targeting of UN and international humanitarian facilities, noting that it was a violation of international law. That targeting has continued with Israel's bombardment and invasion of Deir al-Balah. The city in central Gaza is the only one not to have previously been hit with massive aerial raids in the 21-month-long genocide. The IDF reportedly believed that a number of the remaining Israeli hostages are held in the city. Israeli rights groups and some relatives of the hostages responded to this week's offensive against the city by noting that it again shows that the Israeli regime has no interest in repatriating the hostages and is simply using them as a pretext for the war on Gaza. Because it had been relatively unscathed, Deir al-Balah had become a refuge for tens of thousands of civilians forced to flee other parts of Gaza. Several international aid organizations headquartered their operations in the city for the same reason. As the IDF launched a massive aerial bombardment, tank incursion, and shelling of the city Monday, they were a central target. The World Health Organization's The WHO's main warehouse was bombed, as were the residential quarters of its staff. WHO employees and their families were then handcuffed and stripped by IDF soldiers, with four being detained. The WHO was compelled to evacuate its staff, effectively crippling its operations. The invasion of Deir al-Balah is part of a broader escalation of Israeli offensive. 13 of the Palestinians killed yesterday died in an IDF shelling of tents for displaced families at the Al-Shati refugee camp north of Gaza City. The escalation underscores the fraud of claims by the major imperialist powers and much of the Western press that a new ceasefire agreement may be imminent. To cover over their complicity in the unfolding horrors, the leaders of 25 countries issued a statement this week criticizing the killing of civilians, including aid seekers, and the enforced starvation. The countries which issued the call for Israel to, quote, comply with its obligation under international humanitarian law, are either directly arming the IDF to commit the genocide, such as the UK and Australia, or have politically backed it throughout. Such statements present the atrocities in Gaza in isolation, and as a result of excesses rather than deliberate policy. In reality, the aim of Israel since October 2023 has been to ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip as part of a final solution to the Palestinian problem, and an attempt to redraw the geopolitical map of the Middle East in partnership with American imperialism. The same countries issuing crocodile tears either openly hailed or tacitly endorsed the expansion of this program in the U.S. airstrikes on Iran last month. The intensified offensive against Gaza has gone hand in hand with the stepped up Israeli operations in the West Bank, where at least 1,000 Palestinians have been murdered since the genocide began. Over the past 24 hours, the IDF has raided the Amari refugee camp, having earlier stormed the Sateh Maraba neighborhood in nearby Ramallah. The ongoing region-wide war was the subject of a meeting between Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz and the IDF's top generals on Tuesday night. The Jerusalem Post reported that Katz told the military chiefs that actions had to be taken to resolve Gaza, in line with, quote, aggressive offensive policy, while they should also be prepared for further forceful action in the West Bank. Katz spoke of the need to deepen offensive operations against Yemen and hailed Israel's bombardment of Syria last week. He reportedly declared that Israel would, quote, consider resuming its campaign against Iran, end quote. This broader context of an eruption of imperialist militarism underscores the reality that opposition to the genocide cannot be confined to single-issue protest, nor can such opposition go forward through appealing to the very governments responsible for the atrocities to change course. In a statement Saturday, the World Socialist website called on the millions of workers and young people seeking to end the genocide to focus their attention on the expansion of the class struggle globally. It explained, quote, a new strategy is needed, one that bases the fight against the Gaza genocide on the industrial and political mobilization of the international working class. Workers all over the world are being drawn into struggle against the same ruling class that is sponsoring mass murder in Gaza. End quote. Australian Health Reports Expose Labor's Medicare Election Promises by Mike Head. Recent health statistics, plus a department briefing to the Albanese government, have confirmed the fraud of Labor's May 3rd election pledge that by 2030, 90% of people could see a doctor under the Medicare bulk billing scheme without paying an increasingly expensive upfront fee. As the WSWS warned in the lead-up to the election, quote, similar pledges to save Medicare have been made in every election for decades, only to be broken by Labor and coalition governments alike once the polls closed, end quote. Throughout the election campaign, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese repeatedly flashed a Medicare card and declared, all you should need to see a doctor for free in Australia is your Medicare card, not your credit card, end quote. Equally cynically, the then Liberal National Coalition leader, Peter Dutton, matched his pledge. Labor claimed that $8.5 billion in supposed extra funding to be delivered over 4 years would lift bulk billing rates to 90%. That was to be achieved largely through an increase in the basic Medicare payment to doctors from $42.85 to an expected $70 for every appointment lasting 20 minutes or less. This incentive would apply only to clinics that bulk billed for all their services. In its post-election brief, however, the Department of Health, Aged Care, and Disability told Health Minister Mark Butler that nearly a quarter of doctors' clinics, which operate as profit-making businesses, were unlikely to take up the offer, deeming the incentive payments to be inadequate. According to a report in the Australian newspaper, the department also said the portion of general practitioners, GP clinics, bulk billing all services had halved in the past 3 years, falling to 26%. That may be an understatement of the steep decline since the Albanese government first took office in May 2020. As reported in February between October 2024 and January 2025, the healthcare director website, CleanBill, called 6,925 GP clinics across Australia and found that only 20.7% bulk billed for all standard consultations. Last month, a follow-up CleanBill report estimated that the average upfront payment or out-of-pocket cost to patients was $43. That is a punishing bill for a working-class household amid a continuing cost-of-living crisis. According to other official figures, the overall percentage of patients being bulk billed rather than charged upfront has fallen sharply under the Labor government since 2022, from 88.5% to 77.5%, despite Labor's claims to be reversing the damage done under the previous coalition government. That is far below Labor's 90% pledge. Nor have Labor's new subsidized Medicare Urgent Care Clinics, or UCCs, also run by private operations, substantially improved the situation or alleviated the burden on underfunded and understaffed public hospitals. An interim report in January found that 12% of UCC patients waited longer than 60 minutes to be seen, despite seeking urgent care for injuries or illnesses for which they previously would have sought treatment at a hospital emergency department. This is part of an overall public health crisis that particularly affects workers, pensioners, welfare recipients, and others on low incomes, exacerbating the growth of social inequality. A report from the Grattan Institute think tank last month found that out-of-pocket costs for non-GP specialists have outstripped Medicare reimbursement to patients by 73% in real terms since 2010. The report estimated that more than 1 in 5 patients who saw a non-GP specialist in 2023 was charged an extreme fee, defined as more than 3 times the Medicare reimbursement. Overall, out-of-pocket costs for specialist appointments rose by 158% from 2010 to 2025, more than 3 times the 49% growth in the official wage price index. An initial consultation with a cardiologist or endocrinologist could cost up to $370 and up to $670 for a psychiatrist. As a result, every year about 1.9 million people delayed or avoided getting the care they needed, causing misdiagnosis, avoidable suffering, and added pressure on public hospitals. Largely, this was driven by profit-making. From 2006 to 2021, the cost of running clinics rose 2% a year, while profits rose by about 5% a year. The report estimated that free clinics run by public hospitals provided only a third of all specialist care and criticized their wait times as often far too long. It stated, "In many parts of Australia, wait times for urgent appointments are months longer than clinical guidelines recommend." End quote. The Grattan report described non-GP specialist care as a postcode lottery. People in wealthy areas received about a quarter more services than those in poorer ones, despite wealthier people generally being healthier. On average, poorer Australian residents die about 7.5 years earlier than the wealthiest, and spend more years living with chronic disease. A wider austerity warning. In its post-election brief, the Department of Health, Aged Care, and Disability said projections of health spending overall fell short of the level required to maintain current funding as a percentage of gross domestic product, GDP. Quote, "In 2022-23, health spending accounted for 9.9% of GDP, approximately 0.5% lower than in 2021-2022, the brief stated. The department referred to pressure from the Labor government to cut further. Quote, "The government's desire is to not significantly increase the proportion provided to health," it said. Later, the brief revealed, "The department will experience a 6-10% decrease in internal resourcing from July 1, 2025, with further decreases expected in 2026 to 2027. End quote. Worse lies ahead. The department noted the more fiscally constrained environment Labor needed to impose in its second term in office, quote, "We are acutely aware of the importance of returning Australia's budget to a stronger, more sustainable fiscal position," end quote. The brief declared the need for tough decisions across the entire range of health, disability, and aged care services. Quote, "Health, disability, and aged care systems financing is a significant proportion of Australia's government's expenditure. This will also be a time requiring some tough decisions on spending, with continually increasing demands on the health dollar, and with international forces driving considerable economic turbulence." End quote. This is another warning of Labor's wider assault on social services, which will deepen further as the Trump administration's trade war intensifies, and labor escalates military spending to prepare for a U.S.-led war on China, having already allocated hundreds of billions of dollars for AUKUS submarines and other weaponry. Labor's false promises on healthcare underscore the necessity for a socialist alternative. Medicare, like its predecessor Medibank, introduced in 1975, was supposed to enable working people to see a GP without charge, via bulk billing, and to obtain free treatment at a public hospital. Both these promises have been increasingly killed off by governments at federal and state levels. Moreover, Medicare has never provided free universal health care. Many essential services, such as dental care, are not covered. Long waiting times for treatment in public hospitals have forced 15 million people, more than half the population, into buying expensive private health insurance. This has produced a two-class health system, with profit-making private clinics and hospitals prospering alongside chronically overstretched public hospitals. As part of its program, the Socialist Equality Party calls for the complete socialist reorganization of society to secure the social rights of all, including free, high-quality, readily accessible healthcare. Instead of the ever greater subordination of healthcare to the capitalist profit system, billions of dollars must be dedicated to upgrading, expanding, and staffing public hospitals, medical clinics, and a full range of modern health services. You can find all and more at the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.